Have you ever fired $100,000 client? This week's guest did, and you know what? It made her business better. Welcome, everyone, to the first episode of Thrive to Serve podcast. This is Victor Nagorny, and today's amazing guest is Kate Mayers. She is the CEO and founder of Brown & Mayers, which offers medical, insurance, and legal transcription services nationwide. In this episode, Kate shares her story of ups and downs of running a successful small service business for over 20 years. Her advice includes hiring, dealing with difficult clients, how to offer superb customer service, and how to differentiate yourself from the competition. Get comfortable. You're about to learn how to thrive. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time. Time to break through your limitations that are holding you back from growing your business. Join me on a journey to help you create sustainable, profitable growth through real stories and proven experience from successful service business owners. This is Thrive to Serve Podcast, because you owe your clients to run a thriving business. Together, we shall thrive. This episode is brought to you by Project Army, whose sole purpose is to help small service businesses thrive by providing marketing advice, support, education, and services tailored to your service business. You've done marketing alone long enough. It's time to get marketing help your business deserves. Stop by projectarmy.net to learn more and to request your free heart-to-heart strategy session with a marketing pro dedicated to your success. Project Army, your business is our business. Welcome, Kate, to Thrive to Serve podcast. I'm really happy to have you join me today to talk a little bit about your business and what you've done over the past 20 years. I would really love to learn more and hear your story. How's everything going?
Good. Busy, crazy, but good.
That's always good to hear. Busy is always good.
Yes.
Okay, great. So I wanted to start things off and just learn a little bit more about what you've done before you started the business. Before you started the business, were you doing something different, or was starting the business the first thing that you wanted to do?
Well, this ties into what I was doing before. Basically, after high school, I held several executive secretarial positions for national companies, doing a lot of typing, actually. And then I discovered that I wanted to be a court reporter later on, but there were no schools in Maine, so I couldn't really pursue that because I had to work. I couldn't just not work and go someplace else and go to school. So I kept doing what I was doing. And my last job was with a company called Bath Ironworks out of Bath, Maine. And when I was working there, court reporting schools started across town. So I immediately enrolled. But I didn't find out about that until actually the catalyst for me wanting to go out on my own happened. And that was that somebody at Bath Ironworks, one of my superiors, asked me to make some coffee. And that really pissed me off. And I realized I was never going to go anywhere in that company. Because it was, you know, it was male dominated for sure. And so then I enrolled in court reporting school. I worked full time during the day at Bath Ironworks, went to school at night full time. And then I became a court reporter. And then, I wanted to have my own business. But like I said, I was brand new in the field, and this guy that I was working for, Vernon Brown, hence the name Brown and my company name, I was working freelance for him, and he asked me if I wanted to buy his company because he wanted to retire. And so I said, yeah, absolutely. And so I bought his company, and that's how it started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm really curious, what about court reporting you love that you so much wanted to become one?
I have good finger dexterity, really, excellent typist, and to be quite honest with you, the field of court reporting was started by men way back in the day. And the wages are really good. And so that's basically, that's the catalyst. That was the big reason why I wanted to go into it, to, so that I could make a good income and work for myself.
That's always good. What are you doing right now? I know that you're doing something slightly different, although related to what the court reporting is. Can you tell me a little bit, like an elevator pitch of what you're doing right now with Brown & Mayers?
Yes, right now we are providing medical and legal transcription services nationwide for insurance companies that do need independent medical evaluations transcribed. That's our niche. But we also do legal transcription, and we still do some court reporting on a contractual basis.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So how did you evolve from court reporting to the transcription services? Is that somewhat of a natural evolution?
Yeah, well, sort of. The court reporting field is, when you're doing freelance depositions, it's very cyclical. So you can have a full calendar booked, and then they all fall off the books because, you know, the case was settled a lot of times or something comes up. And so it was really hard to have a steady business with that kind of a business model. And so a lot of people were calling us and asking us if we did just transcription of tapes. Back then it was mostly analog tapes. And so we started with that, and then I saw this ad in National Court Reporters Association magazine about this company that had this business model where people could, the medical side, they could dictate into the phone, and then we could listen to that dictation and transcribe it, and it was kind of this, from what it is now, right now it's a cloud model. Back then it was kind of archaic. So anyway, I set that up and I had all these RJ11 phone jacks on the wall and it was very convoluted. And so we did that and I started doing cold calls to try to get some of that business. And, my first phone call was to an insurance company, Unum. And, I won that account. And a lot of those, 1099 physicians that work there also work for a lot of other insurance companies like Aetna and Liberty Mutual, Sun Life, companies like that. And so we just kind of through word of mouth really grew in that sector. And so that continues to be our niche. And we continue to keep growing in that field thanks to the website that you built us, Victor.
I'm happy to hear that it's working great for you.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm curious, excuse me, you said that you call and you won your large client, the insurance company, through a phone call. How did that go? Because it's not something that a lot of people frown upon call calling these days, but there are other people who swear by phone call calling if it's done properly. Is that something you still do now, or was that just back in the day when you were just getting started?
I think that the sales model has definitely changed compared to back then, which was, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. You know, I mean, you could call people and they would take your call, but today it's almost impossible to get through to people. You know, you get voicemail, and when they listen to your voicemail, they know you're a salesperson and you never get the call back. So back then, yeah, that was how I got the majority of my clients. But now it's mostly, hits on my website, and then we'll follow up with an automated, you know, form for them to fill out, and it sort of goes like that. So it's very different.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you usually do right now? Because I know you grew your business; it's a lot bigger than it was 20 years ago. So what's your typical day looks like right now?
Well, what I love is business development, and I'd love to be able to do more of that. But, you know, I have a small staff, and one of our contracts requires one of the gals in my office here to be off-site covering hearings. It's a court reporting contract. So when she's not here, I'm doing a lot of the, day-to-day minutia, I'd call it, you know, just helping out in the office. I wear all the hats, you know, as a small business person, you do, you know, right. I do a lot of the, I'm trying to automate my billing and all that right now, 'cause that's pretty complicated. Once that gets done, it's going to be much better. But, you know, I do all the billing and a lot of the QuickBooks. I deal with the accountants and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot, you know, as you know.
Absolutely. And I know that grind really, really well.
Yes. I think that's the biggest challenge that small business people have.
No, absolutely. Trying to figure out how to scale your business so you can focus on something that you're more passionate about than other things that are required that you're not so passionate about, like bookkeeping and accounting.
Right, right. Absolutely.
So what keeps you up at night right now as your business grows?
Lately, I've been really concerned about the internet and cyber attacks, because, I mean, our whole business is based upon, you know, internet access. Internet access goes down, we're playing poker around here, you know. There's just no way we can operate. So lately, I really worry about, you know, something happening to the grid and, you know, the system going down, which, you know, we can't control that at all. So that's what worries me the most lately.
Right. You're dealing with the medical transcriptions and the legal transcriptions with the HIPAA compliance and all that good stuff. That's it's something definitely that specifically in your niche will definitely keep you up at night.
Yeah, HIPAA compliance, definitely. That's one of the other. Probably the internet access and the HIPAA compliance issues are my two biggest concerns.
Okay. If you could fix one thing about your business right now, what would that be?
Figuring out how to get a lot more off my plate so I can focus more on business development. You know, I mean, that's just been the ongoing question, like, oh, how do I do that, you know, and hiring the right people. I have a great staff right now, but I've had terrible problems hiring over the past several years. Not getting the right people in here. So what happens is you get someone all trained, they're all, you know, good, and you can go do your own thing, what you want to do, and then they don't end up working out, and so you have to start all over again. So, you know, basically just getting all the right people on the bus.
No, absolutely. That's actually a really good topic to take us to our Thrive Round, as I like to call it. So we can learn a little bit more that some tips that you might have for other business owners that are offering services to their clients. And you mentioned that a big issue that you have is hiring good employees.
Right.
So, well, the first question I have is that's related to that. How did you when you purchased your business? Did you already have employees, or was it pretty much just you?
It was just me.
Okay.
At first, it was just me. I had this little tiny office and this little tiny desk that was so small I couldn't even cross my legs under it. And then it was in this office complex across town. And then I rented another room once I got a few clients next door, and I hired my first employee.
Okay, so that's really my question is, like, how did you know that you're ready for your first employee?
Well, when I first started, I was going out in the field and actually meeting with clients and setting them up. I was going to medical transcriptionist homes and setting them up and training them. So I was starting to be out of the office a lot. And so, you know, the phone was going to a answering service. And so people that called weren't getting the level of service that I wanted them to get. So that's pretty much when I knew I needed to have somebody in the office.
Okay, so they were focusing on the customer service.
Yes.
Okay. And how did you hire your first employee? How did that go?
Let's see. How did I find her? I can't really remember her. But I will say that I kept her way too long.
Okay.
Way too long. Yeah. She turned out to be kind of a real problem employee. She had kind of a history with that, with other companies too, that I didn't know about.
Okay. So that's my second question about that is like, what over the years hiring good employees and not so good employees, what do you think? What are some of the tips that you might have for others to look out for to find the right people or identify those people that might not be the right fit?
Mm-hmm. I would say that, and I do this now. Interview the person yourself first. And if you like them, invite them back and interview them with another member of your staff, a key person. And then, you know, have half a dozen interviews with everybody. Just kind of go through maybe, you know, I'll be first and then I'll do it with my key person and then I'll do it with another person. So there's three people. And then, you know, keep doing it until the interview is done by everybody here in the office. So that the person kind of hopefully gets a feel for who we are and we get a feel for who they are. And then after they make the decision to hire them and they come on board, the biggest advice that I can give anybody is to hire slow and fire fast.
That's really good advice.
If they're not working out, do not keep them around. Because it's going to cost you money and headaches and you're going to have to start all over again after you've got them all trained. And it's better off to get them off the bus and start again.
No, that's really good advice. Absolutely. Okay, so to go back to the business, what do you think is the number one thing a professional service provider needs to know about working with clients or as a business?
Well, usually, you know, the client's always right. So no matter what's going on, if your client's upset or whatever, try, you know, keep your cool and try to be a resource for them. And solve their problem, listen to them. But the biggest thing, I guess, when you're in a service-based business, at least in my space, there's so much competition, you have to really be great at customer service. You know, when the phone rings, answer it the first, you know, the second or the third call. You know, don't let it roll to voicemail. And, you know, we have this rule in the office where it's a one-hour callback rule. So if somebody calls and they have a problem, we haven't figured it out in an hour, we call them back and we let them know, you know, where we're at, what's going on. So things like that, you know, just really caring and about the customer and, you know, making sure they're happy and getting what they need.
No, absolutely. That's a really good tip, especially about the 1 hour, rule. Is that a really good quality, customer service? Is that really your way of trying to differentiate yourself as well from the competitors?
Yes, absolutely. It's really the only thing we have to hang our hat on. You know, it's just people love to work with us because they know they're going to get great service. When they call here, you know, someone's going to answer the phone and we're going to take care of them. You know, it's amazing the level of service that some companies have out there, and I don't know how they stay in business. You know, you call and you get voicemail, they don't call you back, and, you know, it's crazy. For example, I went onto a website for somebody, a vendor that I wanted to do business with, unrelated to my company, and filled out the form on their website, and I've yet to hear from these people.
Right.
You know.
A lot of companies fail to follow up with leads. I've had that experience, too, with trying to find a shop to do a wedding cake for my wedding in August. Mm-hmm. And I Googled a bunch of them and I found them on their websites, and they had their quote forms and everything. I filled mm-hmm. them out and I filled out probably 10 of them. And
wow.
I probably heard from 3 or 4.
Yeah, that's
that
amazing.
Got back to me. What was interesting is the same thing happened when we were trying to, looking for the space for the wedding reception. Not only never got emails for some venues that I was interested in, but I couldn't even get through to them. Maybe they're out of business and the website was still, whatever the case is. But it's an issue that a lot of people don't realize that they need to fix, and they will get a lot more business.
Oh my God, it's amazing, you know. And another thing is, you have to get back to them quickly because time kills deals, you know. You know, if somebody calls you and you're talking to them and they want a quote, you got to get that quote out the door, you know, fast, within a few hours. Because if you don't, they're going to go look somewhere else.
Absolutely. In this digital age, time is everything.
Definitely. Definitely.
You're in a very competitive space with transcription service providers, offshoring stuff, trying to undercut everyone with lower pricing. Do you still compete on price, or do you have any tips on how do you get out of that downward spiral?
Well, I have a set price that I quote, and then I have a price that will allow me to negotiate a little bit, but I won't go below that price.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to give it away just for the sake of getting business.
Right. I know that a lot of the transcription service providers, they charge per minute. Do you? I think I remember reading on the website that you charge in a different way. You charge per page.
It depends on the service. For medical transcription, we charge by the line, which is pretty much the industry standard. For transcription that comes in on, like, legal stuff or whatever that comes in, our focus groups, we charge by the page. We don't like to charge by the minute because sometimes there's a lot of dead space on a recording that we have to fast forward through it. So then the client will get charged more than they really should get charged. So what we like to do is just charge for the actual content of the transcript and how many pages it is. We think that's the fairest way to charge.
No, it definitely sounds like you're looking out for your clients.
Yeah, we try. We really do. When I first started out and I was using outside transcriptionists for legal transcription, stuff that wasn't, you know, on the phone line, I was charging, what was I doing? I was paying my transcriptionist by the hour, and I was getting, like, oh my God, raked over the coals. They were sending me these invoices that were just crazy. And when I changed to paying them per page, I actually lost a lot of them, if that tells you anything.
Right.
They were padding their invoices. I can't charge the client this much money. This is crazy. So I just went to that per page thing, and it's worked out great.
Well, that's always good. As long as it's working out and it's in the best interest of your clients, that's what's important.
Right. Yep.
So what... when you start working with a client or in a sales conversation with them, do you have any tips on setting client expectations before you start working with them?
Yeah, if it's a medical client, we tell them, you know, we're going to put you with your own transcriptionist so that he or she can really become familiar with your style, the vocabulary you use, the way you like your transcript setup format wise, but you know, we always have to make a few tweaks in the beginning, and it takes some time for the transcriptions to get acclimated. So we just ask for your patience, when starting this new account, and that really helps.
Okay, that's great. Well, I'm yeah. glad that you don't have to transcribe doctor's notes and handwriting.
Oh gosh. I don't think we would. No, we wouldn't do that. If someone called and wanted us to do that, I think I would say no. We don't. We can. But even transcribing them, dictating is. I mean, they dictate like rap stars because, you know, the more patients they see, the more money they make, which is
right.
really, really good because electronic medical records really slows down that process, which is good for us because we don't want them to use, you know, those templates. We want them to dictate. So,
right. Okay. What's the best thing that you've done to get clients?
I had you build my website, Victor.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it's working out. Right now, the website is the primary way for you getting clients.
I'm getting a ton of leads on the website. It's crazy. But we also get a lot of referrals from happy customers, I must say. And when we do get that, we send them some of our Brown & Myers coffee mugs and pens and things like that, and a thank you for the referral card.
Well, that's great. That's actually another question that I had was if you have any tips on how you can get more client referrals, if there's anything that you do to try to get clients to refer others.
Actually, I would love to get with you at some point and set up some kind of a referral program that's more, you know, automated. So I think, you know, what we're doing now is okay. We're kind of rewarding them after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to do something proactive to bring in more, you know, and I'm not sure how that would work. I'm sure you have some ideas around that, though.
Yeah, absolutely. We can definitely schedule a time and chat about that.
Okay.
So the other question I had was, have you ever fired a client?
Yes, I fired a $100,000 a year account client because I just couldn't make the woman happy. And I don't, it wasn't us. It wasn't me. I finally concluded that it was her. And so I just, you know, nicely asked her to find another vendor because she was just constantly bringing me into meetings with her staff and just raking me over the coals. It was embarrassing. It was humiliating. It was very, very stressful. So I decided to terminate the relationship with that client.
That's a very large account.
Yeah.
Were you looking back? Was that a good decision?
Absolutely.
That's good. Do you have any tips on how to fire a client with when it's a such a large account and it might hurt? How to try to find courage, so to speak, to do it?
Well, I think, you know, in my situation, it just came down to I'd had enough. I didn't want to take any more abuse. I felt like I was being, you know, verbally abused, basically. And also my transcriptionists were getting really frustrated, and, you know, because they felt like, oh, my God, it's always something wrong, you know. And we were doing a great job. And, you know, and the doctors and the other people at this practice really liked us. They didn't want us to see us go. So it just, for me, it got to a point where enough was enough. And I just, you know, I just told her that she was going to have to find another vendor that could, you know, hopefully meet her needs, because we weren't able to meet her needs in a satisfactory way.
Right. It sounds like you would never be able to meet her needs ever.
No, definitely not. We never, never would.
Do you think when you have a client like that, that firing them sooner is better than dragging it out?
Well, I'm a deep thinker, so for me, sometimes it takes me a while to get from point A to point B, or whatever you want to call it. So, I think it's easier when you have an established company and you have, you know, a book of business. I was fairly green back then. I didn't really have a lot of clients. And I think that's, you know, that's why it took me so long to make the final decision. But I think, you know, the more seasoned you are and the more clients you have, you'd probably make the decision faster, sooner rather than later. I know I would now. Definitely. We're just not worth it. I mean, I could go work for another company if I wanted to be abused. I mean, you know, I mean, one of the reasons you want to go out on your own, or at least I did, is because I wanted a really nice place, an atmosphere to work, a nice place for my people to work, you know, without that kind of negative, stressful vibe, you know. I want it to be fun.
No, absolutely.
And rewarding.
When the cash flow becomes the decision maker for you, you become an employee.
Absolutely, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so my next question is, what's the future for you for Brian and Mayers? Where do you see yourself going?
Well, I'd like to keep growing in the IME space. I'd really like to own that space. That's where I'm focused right now. I want to do some, set up some campaigns around that, which I want to talk to you about as well. But I have another idea that I'm working with a colleague on that's, I don't really have the liberty to say what it is right now, but I'll just say that it's something that's really needed out there and it's very exciting, but it does tie in with, our transcription services.
Okay. That's always exciting. New projects.
Yeah. definitely.
Great. Yeah. Where do you see a professional services heading in the future? There's a lot of in news. There's a lot of talk about AIs, you know, technology replacing human beings. But there's where do you see the services? Do you see that a lot of things might be get replaced, or do you see there's still a huge need for human to human services, so to speak?
I think that for the next 5 years, at least, there's going to be a lot more opportunity. You know, there's a lot more people going to the doctor now too because of Obamacare, which is really good for a company like mine. But, you know, we lost a good amount of business to electronic medical records. So, you know, the physicians just, they stopped dictating. You know, when you go see a doctor and they're sitting in front of a computer and they're not even looking at you and they're putting all this stuff in, typing all this stuff in themselves. Well, it turns out that they don't like doing that. They don't want to be clerical people. They're doctors. And it really slows down the process on how many patients they can see in a day if they have to do all this paperwork. So we've seen a big switch from, you know, physicians' practices really, you know, being exciting and embracing electronic health records to using like automated prescription lab interfaces and things like that in these programs, and then going back to outsourcing their transcription.
Right.
To companies like mine. So we've seen a big increase in business this year, more than we have for the last at least 3 years.
Yeah, that's always good. I never thought about that, where the doctors just type things in or record it in an audio format.
Right. You know, and I think that because they talk so fast, and we have a lot of physicians with foreign dialects, you know, accents and things like that, I don't think voice recognition is ever going to be able to totally replace us in that regard. And if it does get way better and we do start using more voice recognition, then we're going to probably, you know, morph from doing total 100% transcription to editors on the back end. But hopefully I can get out of this business in the next 5 years and go do something else. That's my plan.
That's always good. Do you think you might be able, you might want to sell it?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's always good. Yes. So my last question is, what's the number one advice, a gold nugget to take away from our interview today, for an entrepreneur building their own, or growing their service business that you can give?
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to that, hire slow and fire fast.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I have, and a lot of my colleagues will say the same thing. That's the toughest area in a small business, is getting the right people and managing your employees. It's just really, really tough.
Oh, that's one big challenge for small businesses, is they are really good at what they do, but then they have to put on the hat of a leader and a manager and figure out how to delegate and let other people do their work for them.
Right, without having to babysit.
Yes, and handhold.
Right, exactly. So that would definitely be my biggest tip.
That's a great tip.
Thanks.
So how can somebody get in touch with you if they have a need for transcription services or any other services that you offer?
They can email sales@brownmyers.com, or they can call our toll-free number at 800-785-7505.
Okay, that's great. And I'll make sure that we'll include that contact information in description and summary for our interview today.
Okay, great.
Okay,
thank you, Victor.
Thank you so much, Kate. I really enjoyed our conversation today, and I learned quite a few things. And I know that our listeners as well will learn quite a few things to help them grow their service business.
Oh, good. I hope I can relieve them of some of the pain that I experienced.
I'm sure you did.
Good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Kate.
All right. Thank you for having me, Victor.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
I hope you were able to take away a few gold nuggets from today's interview with Kate. Check out show notes for a full transcript at projectarmy.net/show. And if you have any questions, do leave a comment. My next guest is Monica Lowy from BodyLink Speech Therapy and Speak Your Peace Holistic Life Coaching. We'll discuss how to charge cash in an industry where everyone wants to pay with health insurance and Medicaid, and a few life coaching tips to lead a better, more fulfilling life. The next episode will be available on December 15th. Don't forget to subscribe, either by email, on iTunes, on Google Play Music, or Stitcher Radio, for our bi-monthly show. And remember, you owe your clients to run a thriving business. Until next time.